Morning, guys. How are you doing?
Really good. How are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thank you very much.
Gareth, we're here to talk, first of all, about the Expect the Unexpected awareness campaign, which is all about pneumonia. How did you get involved with this yourself? I believe you got struck down by the disease yourself, didn't you?
Yeah, this time last year, I was suffering with a bit of a cold and a cough. I was very busy. Work had kind of taken over life, and I didn't listen to my body, so I kept that work ethic going. Then the cold and cough turned into, you know, a bit of temperatures, and then my cough became so bad that one day I actually, you know, thought I'd broken my ribs from coughing too much. Now, I know what a broken rib feels like because I've broken enough in my time with the rugby, so it wasn't like a fantasy I'd created. And when I went into hospital, because I thought I was going to get my ribs fixed, they said, "You haven't broken your ribs, you've got pneumonia." So, you know, to be at the age of 40, very fit, I never expected that pneumonia would strike me at the age I was and the fitness level I was. So, and the Expect the Unexpected really is just to get people aware that pneumonia is something that can strike anybody. You know, society, we think it only strikes the elderly or potentially the weak. But the reality is it can strike anybody, and when it does strike, then it's something that can be very, very fatal.
Gareth, I remember my father getting pneumonia. He was in his mid-20s at the time,
wow.
Very fit guy, and he was hospitalised, yeah. Really knocked him off his feet. Just how serious a condition is it?
I was in hospital for a week, 10 days. It is really, really serious, and if left too long, it's fatal. It's a life-threatening thing. So, you know, people have it as young as teenagers up to, you know, people who are elderly. But because we don't really prevent ourselves against it, because everybody thinks, well, it will never happen to me. It's something only ever happens to maybe, I don't know, my grandfather or people who are elderly. Then we don't protect ourselves in it. And the reality is that there is a prevention of it. You can get injections that would prevent you from having it. And some people fall in the category where the NHS could pay for it and is free for them, and some don't. But, you know, for me, who didn't fall in the category of having it for free, then I'd rather pay for it, because the prevention of it, after knowing I've had it, is a lot better than having to go through the cure of it again.
That's the only upside to being type 2 diabetic. I'll get a pneumonia, chap.
Oh, well, there you are.
There's only a few upsides. That's one
right,
of them.
Right, there you are. You can buy an extra Christmas present for someone this year, then,
yeah,
if you're saving your money on that.
Exactly. At what point, then, when you had this cold, did you think, this is not man flu?
Basically, when I felt like I'd coughed so hard that I'd broken my ribs, because the symptoms... You know, I kept thinking I'm too fit, I'm too healthy for it not to be anything apart from a cold. And I, you know, my ego wouldn't let me kind of think, you know what, you need to go see the doctor, you need to take time off work. And a lot of our egos really, you know, don't want us to take time off work, don't really listen to our bodies, because we think, you know, we don't want to let people down and we don't want to show any weakness. But the reality was that, you know, if I'd have gone earlier, or even if I'd have had my pneumonia injection last year, then, you know, for the sake of taking some time off to relax, or the sake of taking some time off and a bit of money to pay for the pneumonia jab, then, you know, having pneumonia and the amount of time I had to take off, it meant, you know, I was out of action and out of work and letting people down for a lot longer than I would have been if I had actually got it sorted too in the first place.
Gareth, we can't have you on without talking some rugby. And we're obviously Radio Yorkshire, big fans of rugby league up here. You've played both codes.
Yeah.
We're obviously very keen on the story of Sam Burgess at the moment, and looking and seeing what's happened to him over the last few weeks and the last few months. What are your thoughts on him, first of all, moving to Union and now moving back to league over in South Sydney?
Do you know what? I think for any player to switch cords from the game of they've grown up, which has been a natural game for them to play, for them all of a sudden to switch cords, I think it's a brave thing to do. But, you know, my only concern is, I understand the reasons why Sam would have gone back. But my only concern is that a lot of people are going to question his commitment to it in the first place now. Because I think that, you know, sport is, and sportsmen and women are kind of defined on kind of how they bounce back from things that people think they can't do rather than what they can do. And I think that, you know, a lot of Union critics are going to look at it and say that, well, because he couldn't get to grips with the game and the game in England all of a sudden wasn't going so well, then he decided to go back. But, you know, I'm sure he has his own personal reasons for going back as well. You know, his, Australia is a long way away from England. All his family are in Australia. And maybe it took him time out of the game he loved to realise actually what it meant to him. So maybe the game of rugby league was, you know, something he's played all his life, and he thought, you know what, I'll try something new. Obviously it hasn't worked, so he decided to go back for his own reasons. But people are going to say, I suppose, well, has he gone back because he didn't master it, or because all of a sudden England went out to the World Cup? So, you know, at the moment in time, it's a difficult scenario for English rugby, and unfortunately I think Sam is taking a lot of the blame for it as well.
It seems to have turned pretty nasty, actually. Burgess released that article in the Daily Mail. Then it transpires that his former players and teammates and his coach at Bath are very unhappy about the way he left. What are your thoughts on the way he's left the game? It all seems very sudden.
Yeah, do you know what? I think it all seems sudden to us because all of a sudden we read an article in the newspaper and all of a sudden it's out there. I'm sure the reality is that it didn't, you know, someone didn't pick up the phone to Sam one night and say, do you want to come back? And then an hour later, you know, he decided to make. I'm sure it was a longer decision than that. But I can see both sides of the argument. And, you know, I think from the players in Bath, the players and coaches in England, then they'd feel a little bit aggrieved, because I'm sure, because, you know, I've been in the situation myself when I went to league, is people take a lot of their own personal time to kind of integrate. So get to help you for a half hour after training, every training session, to get to know the game, to buy into the understanding of the culture of the game and the roots of the game. So I'm sure there's been a year of people taking a lot of their own personal time to help Sam, you know, get to the stage he was. And maybe they are feeling now that, you know, that maybe he's thrown it back in their face and decided, you know what, this wasn't for me, even though everybody has helped me. So maybe that's probably the message that's coming from the England players and maybe the coaches at this moment in time.
Gareth, what's your thoughts on England itself? They are in a bit of disarray, it seems, after a horrendous World Cup. As a proud Welshman, then you must be smiling a little bit inside.
No, mate, do you know what? Obviously, I was happy when Wales beat England. But ultimately, you know, I cared about rugby in the Six Nations, because I want the Six Nations to be a tournament that kind of is the tournament where teams are pitted against the best. So when we come to play the Australias, New Zealand, South Africas, we're actually prepared to beat them. So I want the Six Nations to be that quality of a tournament. So, you know, I do care that, you know, the Six Nations is a constantly competitive scenario. And for that, you need England to be good, because that's why it is competitive, because, you know, the England teams have always been, you know, the teams that everybody wants to beat, and everybody raises their game. So I want them to be good. But ultimately, they seem to be in a bit of disarray. And I think, again, the Six Nations will be really exciting, because a lot of people will be looking to see, like, how England, and even Ireland for that matter, are going to bounce back from a disappointing World Cup. Will Scotland carry on, you know, from where they left off in a successful and a very unlucky World Cup? Will Wales carry on? So, you know, for me, I think to having a good England in the Six Nations is vital for Northern Hemisphere rugby.
The head coach, Stuart Lancaster, has obviously stepped down this week. Do you think that was the right decision, Gareth? And who are you tipping to be the new England boss?
Right decision, again, so much goes on. You know, even though the ultimate, I suppose, responsibility for the England coach is how the team perform and if they win or lose. But also, it's a big role being a coach of a national team, because you have to put things in place, structures, you know, and structures for players to be able to come through, structures for players when they finish playing. There's a lot goes on in that. So, you know, what else I know about Stuart Lancaster is he created a good structure within the game, but ultimately winning or losing is what he's been judged on. And, you know, I think for me, whoever takes over for him, I suppose it's kind of sad when you read, you know, when you read the list of potential people to take over for him, is the fact that there's no one from England, and the fact that, you know, you have such a huge pool of players, such a great wealth in funding and of talent, that ultimately you're feeling that you have to go to maybe the Southern Hemisphere to find a coach to coach that national team. For me, it's sad, and also it doesn't really make sense. So maybe there's a problem underlying there.
Yeah, Eddie Jones seems to be the bookies' favourite at the moment. And you know, unsurprisingly, he's doing fantastic things with Japan at the moment.
Yeah, like Eddie Jones, you know, obviously has a great pedigree and is a great coach without a shadow of a doubt. But you know what? Being a great coach, sometimes when you coach a national team, it's not what it's all about. It's also it's understanding the people, it's understanding the culture, understanding the history. So you can't just rock up and bring your own ethoses with you and expect everything in that whole country to change, because ultimately you want the clubs to be playing the way that the country wants to play. You want to have the respect from everyone. So, you know, sometimes when you're a foreign coach coming in, then that takes a while to gain. That takes a long time to trust people and to trust their ideas. So, you know, if they do get a foreign coach in, then, you know, the England that I'm expecting are going to want results straight away. And the question is if you get somebody in from abroad who's going to try and change everything around, then are you going to get them results straight away, or are you going to have to buy the time? And I don't think that, you know, with the disastrous World Cup England have had, that everybody's willing to sit back and wait for a structure to take time and take place. They want results, so they want them now.
You don't fancy the job yourself, Gareth, do you?
Oh, mate. Imagine this Welshman going over the bridge every day wearing an England rose, but my car would be egged every single day.
I went to the West Yorkshire Playhouse last year. They had the Crouch Touch Pause Engage play about your life. A staggeringly amazing play. Really, really interesting. And I think it was great, not because you've got an amazing life story, but also where they sort of interwove the story about what was going on in Bridge End at the time as well. It was an incredibly emotional play.
Yeah, no, I was really proud to be a part of the process of right now with Max Stafford Clark, who was the producer, and it was you know, and it was a similar, the place I come from is Bridge End, you know, and it's a lovely small town, but it's very similar to many towns and cities across the UK where, you know, rugby is kind of the heart of it, but also there's so much taken away from it with funding and kind of nothing for the kids to really do. So it was a story of my town, but also of a town that that people, so many people can relate to. And then my story personally interwoven with that. And again, it's a story that a lot of people can relate to as well. So it was very hard hitting, but also very factual, and something I was really, really proud of.
Yeah, it's a fantastic. If people get a chance to see it at some point, make sure they do. If people want to find out a bit more about protecting themselves against pneumococcal pneumonia, it's www.noonexpects.co.uk is the website to go to. Gareth Thomas, thanks so much for joining us on Radio Yorkshire.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.